This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, August 31st, 2011. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Just ahead on the program, there is more to the U.S. Census than just the populations of cities and states. Demographers can break down interesting profiles of a region based on age, education, or any number of other ingredients. The rest of the census story in just a moment.
Also later, the ground has been broken for new construction at Ozark Hall on the University of Arkansas campus, and the head of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, Maria Haley, discusses jobs.
Support for KUAF comes from Theater Squared, opening its sixth season with Boeing Boeing, running this Thursday, September 1st until the 25th at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studio. This comedy, set in 1960s Paris, follows the turbulent ride of an ambitious architect who is engaged to three flight attendants at once. Tickets and more information for Boeing Boeing are available at theater2.org or 443-5600.
Did you know that almost a majority of babies now born in the United States are members of a minority population? And that more unmarried mothers, about 41%, are now giving birth? And that the number of Americans under the age of 18 is at a historical low? All these things are being extrapolated from the new 2010 census and incrementally released to the public in batches of data. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports on how we can find and interpret that information for ourselves.
The cultural, racial, and social fabric of America looks nothing like the cloth of 20 years ago, and change has been swift. In 2000, nearly 58% of all babies born in the United States were white. But according to the 2010 census, that percentage has fallen below 50%. That's because Hispanic mothers are now bearing many more children than white mothers. And most older Americans are white. 80% of all seniors, 65 and up. You know, with the release of the 2010 census, we're finding out more and more about us, and collecting that base information has become increasingly efficient. Stacy Vidal is assistant branch chief in the U.S. Census Bureau's Media Relations Office.
Well, actually, the census, we first mail a form to most households around the nation first, and if you don't follow up or you don't fill that out and mail it back to us, then we have to go door to door. But we did see about 74% of households did take that initiative, fill out that form, and return it to us. The types of questions that were on the 2010 census form are very basic this time around. Just ask about things like age, sex, race, Hispanic origin, your relationship to the householder, and whether you own or rent your home.
The race question is divided between race and ethnicity. Race, of course, is your biological physical characteristics. Ethnicity is your traditional heritage.
We actually ask two questions that get at our racial and ethnic diversity in this nation on the census form. The first question we ask folks is about whether or not you're Hispanic. And then we ask a separate question that asks about your race and identify several examples of different major race groups that are in this country. And these the concepts of Hispanic origin and race, the federal government has determined are two separate and distinct concepts. So we had our guidance on how to collect those data and produce them from the Office of Management and Budget. So we do ask those two questions on the census.
Unlike race, the 2010 census does not ask about sexual orientation, at least not yet, or gender identity. That information is extrapolated, most notably by the Williams Institute, based at the UCLA School of Law. So in its census snapshot 2010 of same-sex couples, LGBTQ people living with a spouse or partner can identify their relationship by checking either the husband or wife or unmarried partner box.
Any information we have about, say, same-sex couples comes from two different questions on the census form. One is about the sex, so whether you're male or female, and the other is about the relationship to the householder. So we offer sort of examples for people to check off, say whether you're a spouse or an unmarried partner or maybe a roommate or a child or other things like that. And so we use the data from those two questions to provide estimates or counts of, say, same-sex unmarried partners, as well as later this fall, will release counts of same-sex married couples.
Same-sex marriage is not federally recognized under the Defense of Marriage Act, but six states have legalized gay marriage, most recently in New York. Still, according to the Williams Institute, gay couples remain vastly undercounted. because some prefer to not disclose their relationship, perhaps marking themselves as roommates, for example. But those that do can be tallied among parents in America. And it turns out Arkansas ranks third among 41 states, with 27% of the state's 7,000 gay and lesbian couples raising kids together. Most of those couples are concentrated in Pulaski, Benton, Washington, and Carroll counties. But what made big news in Arkansas was the spike in the state's Hispanic population over the past decade, 6.4%. Or 186,050 live here. 75,000 are 18 years of age and under. And nearly 43,000 Hispanic babies were born in Arkansas over the past decade, a whopping 134% increase. Locating these statistics is simple, Stacy Vidal says, using the Census Bureau's interactive website.
So the Census Bureau, we offer a few different ways to start diving into these great numbers coming out of the 2010 census. One way is through some of the interactive maps that we have. If you just go to 2010census.gov on our website and click on data, you'll see a couple different maps there that'll show changes in your state by race, by Hispanic origin. They'll look at age. There's another map there that'll drill down and show you even more information at the very local level. You can go in and search by zip code or your city name or your county, and you'll even see other things about home ownership and whether people own or rent or own it with a mortgage and things like that. And then if you want a little bit more information and you want to start diving in deeper and exploring some of those comparisons or looking at, say, age by sex and maybe by home ownership, then you can use another tool that we have online called American Fact Finder. So there you just go to census.gov, click on American Fact Finder over on the left, and then you can just start searching through the different topics or the year that maybe you're interested in.
Arkansas also has the largest population of Marshallese in the world outside of the Marshall Islands. Chronically evasive Marshallese finally came forward this census, 1,494 in 2000, to over 5,500 in 2010. Statewide, we saw a 9.1% increase in general population, but the state's delta continues to lose people. Monroe County, a 20% decrease. And Northwest Arkansas is gaining population. Benton County up 44%, and Washington County up nearly 29%. Nationwide, most of us are women, 50.8%, but according to what's called a census brief, more than a quarter of American children now live with one parent. The brief also cites that children living at home with both parents will tend to grow up with more financial and education advantages.
The Census Bureau also offers another resource for looking at how our nation is changing. Those are called 2010 Census Briefs. So if you go to 2010census.gov and click on data, that'll take you to a page that has our interactive maps, but it also has a list of the different 2010 census briefs. So these briefs go in and analyze and go into a little more detail about, so far we've released about the Hispanic population, about the age and sex composition that gives analysis about how our nation is aging. We can also see one about how the population is moving around the country and where it's growing and where it's not growing as fast. And then this fall, we'll continue to release briefs that go into more detail about the other race groups in the population, as well as some other topics out of the census.
Another factoid, one-person households are on the rise, as are households where unrelated people are living together, likely to save economic resources. Where we live is also changing. Rural counties continue to lose population nationwide, now ranked at 16%. More than half of Americans live in the suburbs now, and many are moving south and west. More boomers are taking in aging parents, creating more multi-generational households, up 36% from 2000. And we're living longer. Americans 85 and older have increased to 5.5 million of us. Some of these census outcomes even took the Census Bureau by surprise.
We're seeing that the South and the West are by far growing the fastest in the nation. We're seeing that the nation's becoming more multiracial. More people are identifying as being more than one race. The nation also is aging. We're seeing that overall, the median age of the country has gotten older, and it's gotten older in every single state, including in Arkansas. We're also seeing there are more vacants. And then the Asian and Hispanic populations are growing the fastest among race groups and ethnic groups.
So by 2040, will whites be the new minority eclipsed by Hispanic and Asian majorities?
Yeah, it's yet to see. I think that's one of the great things about the census is it gives us this picture every decade about how have we changed this time around? What does our new portrait look like? And there's some other ways that the Census Bureau also tracks how the population is changing throughout the decade. So hopefully we'll see in time to come, you know, just exactly how those trends change and where they intersect.
And one final trend is the mad scramble known as redistricting, now accomplished in Arkansas. The U.S. Constitution requires a national census be taken every decade to better allocate federal funding and to determine congressional, state, and local districts, inevitably causing certain political junkies, literally this year, to go all a Twitter. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Also, according to new data from the 2010 census, Arkansas has one of the highest divorce rates in the nation for men, likely driven by the second highest poverty rate in the U.S.
And in a few minutes on Ozarks, the executive director of Arkansas's Economic Development Commission talks to Roby Brock about her concerns over the state's economy.
It's been really tough. It's a continuous challenge for us. The economy is not doing very well. And we would like to be able to go and get some decisions out of Washington so that decisions can be made.
Maria Haley on jobs and the hope for an economic turnaround soon. That's later on Ozarks at Large.
Yesterday, the University of Arkansas broke ground on the construction and renovation of the historic Ozark Hall. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker was present at the event and has this report.
Welcome to another major event in the life of this university. We're here to break ground on a critical restoration and addition project. For more than 70 years, Ozark Hall has served this campus well.
Provost and Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at the University of Arkansas, Sharon Gaber, was addressing students, staff, faculty, and members of the community at yesterday's groundbreaking ceremony for the renovation and expansion of the historic Ozark Hall. The first phase of the existing structure was built in 1940. An addition to the east side of the building came in 1947. The building is the former home of the Business Administration Department, Center for Advanced Spatial Technology, and the Graduate School and International Education. Most recently, it has housed the Eleanor Mann School of Nursing and the Department of Geosciences. University of Arkansas Chancellor Dr. G. David Gearhart says, even though, as part of the campus walk and the historic campus core, Ozark Hall is a significant part of the identity and character of the university, it certainly does require some upgrades to function smoothly in concurrence with the university's current sustainability efforts.
While everyone, I think, certainly appreciates the virtues of historic buildings like Ozark Hall, I don't think anybody really wants to work in an antiquated one. From top to bottom, this facility needs just about everything. It needs an upgrade in electrical, mechanical, HVAC systems, as well as the flooring. The plumbing needs to be completely reworked. The windows all need to be redone. The masonry.
Apart from the renovation work, 21,000 square feet of space will be added to the south wing of the building to not only provide a permanent home for University of Arkansas's Honors College, but also a 275-seat auditorium. The total cost of the project is $27.1 million, which will come in part from a bond supported by the student facility fee and from generous support of the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The construction work will cause some discomfort to two students and faculty in getting to classes and around campus, but Chancellor Gearhart characterized this discomfort as growing pains for a university that sees nothing but growth in its future. In fact, plans to renovate and update other campus buildings are already in the works. Provost Sharon Gaber has the details.
The university continues to grow, so we'll have to see. We certainly know that we have to continue to bring our facilities up. We have expectations, our students have expectations, and we will continue to look at what buildings need to be done. We know that, for example, Hotz Hall has been an office building on campus for a number of years. We're talking about bringing that back to be a residence hall because of the number of students that we have asking for residence space on campus. So that's one of the next buildings that we will have on campus that is to be renovated.
One of the students who addressed the crowd yesterday, Kiko Haydar, an honors kinesiology student and walk-on member of the Arkansas Razorbacks men's basketball team, summed up the sentiment of the event.
Many students in the Honors College today may not be around campus to reap the benefits of our newly constructed home, but our presence today acknowledges our participation in the planting for the future. It reminds me of a story from Arabic folklore in which an old man is bent over planting a date palm tree. A young man walks by and inquires if the man expects to eat the fruit from this palm tree, being as palm trees take many years to bear fruit. The old man replied no, stating, "Zara'u fa'akalna, wa nazra'u fa'ya'kulun," which means they planted the fields so we could eat, and now we plant the fields so others can eat.
Ozark Hall is due to be completed in August 2013. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mutholkar.
This is Ozarks at Large. Maria Haley has been the executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission for almost the entirety of Governor Mike Beebe's time in the governor's mansion. The commission recruits jobs to the state. Last week, she talked to the Arkansas Developers Conference about the current state of jobs in Arkansas. After that speech, she talked with Roby Brock from our content partner, TalkBusiness.net.
All right, Maria, there have been some pretty tough economic conditions for the last year, year and a half. How is Arkansas performing in terms of the state of the economy right now?
Robbie, it's been really tough. It's a continuous challenge for us. The economy is not doing very well, and we would like to be able to go and get some decisions out of Washington so that decisions can be made by companies that are looking at Arkansas.
Now, the governor has said publicly on a couple of occasions that there are as many as 60 open files of businesses wanting to locate or expand in Arkansas. I got to ask, are you okay with him talking about this sensitive information so publicly?
Well, it has to be said because it is true. And I know I told the governor 2 weeks ago that it is a little over 60 open files that we have in the agency. But as of today, it is actually 73. So it's increased, and we are just working very hard and very diligently in trying to get those companies to announce or decide or at least continue with the project, discussing the project.
Well, Maria, if you could wave a magic wand and make one thing kind of happen to get some of these projects to close or make progress, what would it be?
Stability in our economy, message from Washington, D.C., about what the policies are going to be, and also at the same time be able to have a little bit of confidence in Washington, and there's none right now.
When you look around and see how some other states are performing, you still see Arkansas's unemployment rate at a 24-year high at 8.2%. You got several layoff announcements this week. Other states are in worse shape too, but how do you package that message that it's bad, but it's not as bad here?
Well, it really is not as bad here because our unemployment is lower than the national unemployment. And also at the same time, the most important message we have is that we have a balanced budget and we have no debt and we are not letting go of policemen and policewomen and teachers and nurses. And we have a stable economy, so that's really an important message that we tell our prospects and our existing industries.
Why is the fact that Arkansas doesn't have substantial debt, why is that a message to push with business leaders?
Well, mainly because it's important for them to realize that we are stable and that and it's really important for them to know that we have a balanced budget and that we do take care of making sure that we do not overspend in the state.
Well, there's been a lot of news and concerns coming out of western Arkansas and the Fort Smith region regarding Whirlpool and its troubles, the $100 million Mitsubishi wind turbine plant and its legal squabbles with GE. Are you concerned about those two projects?
Yes, I am concerned about those two projects, and we are certainly tracking it, and we talked to Whirlpool and we talked to Mitsubishi, and Mitsubishi is still on schedule, but yes, there are some difficulties ahead and the issues are there, but we are tracking it and we are talking to the two companies.
Now, are those problems that they're having, are they issues that you, that the state can help resolve, or do they have to be kind of worked out through their corporate structures?
Well, we are hoping that we would be able to also talk to the corporate, and we are actually, Robbie, we are talking to the corporate people. But obviously, these are business decisions of both Whirlpool and Mitsubishi, and we have to respect the business decisions, but at the same time, we need to go and give them our message.
Maria Haley is the executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. She talked to Roby Brock from our content partner, TalkBusiness.net. Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at bankozarks.com. And Verizon, offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communication store or online at vzw.com/small business.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art is scheduled to open in just over 70 days in Bentonville. Tomorrow, the museum will hold a pair of job fairs at Northwest Arkansas Community College. Alice Murphy, a spokeswoman for Crystal Bridges, says the museum needs a staff of more than 120 people.
We have a number of positions we're looking to fill. You can get a list of all of them from our website. But, you know, some of them are security officer, dishwasher, a lot of positions in our restaurant, guest services associate, gallery attendant, and we're going to have a number of representatives from the museum there, and we're going to be conducting some interviews and taking resumes.
The fair sessions tomorrow will be from 9 until 11 in the morning and from 6 until 8 tomorrow evening. The fairs will take place at the Shoemaker Center for Workforce Technology on the NWACC campus. No advance registration is required.
Labor Day is a traditional time for families to travel, and gas prices in Arkansas this holiday weekend are about a dollar higher per gallon than Labor Day 2010. Mike Wright with the AAA Auto Club says the average price for gas in Arkansas is $3.48.
I suspect that we should see some moderation as we get towards the end of the heavy drive season, which typically is Labor Day. The demand for gasoline starts to fall off fairly rapidly after Labor Day, and usually, if there is a usual nowadays, we see a decrease in prices as we go into the fall, and we enjoy the lowest prices for gasoline in the winter months.
The lowest average gas prices in the state can be found in Little Rock, and the highest average prices are in Eureka Springs.
Officials with the city of Bentonville say they've received word that FEMA will fund 75% of the cost for the total replacement of the Bella Vista Dam. Another 12.5% of the cost will be provided by the Arkansas Department of Emergency Management, and additional money will be in the form of a grant from the Arkansas Disaster Relief Fund. The structure was damaged by floods in 2008 and by floods again last year. The new dam will include 500 linear feet of earthen dam and a walking trail for pedestrian use.
The University of Arkansas volleyball team's record is now 2-2 after dropping a 5-set decision to Oral Roberts University last night in Fayetteville. During the match, senior Kelly Stefanovich posted a career performance with 30 kills, 14 digs, and 7 blocks. Arkansas will travel to Winston-Salem, North Carolina this weekend for a tournament. The Razorbacks will not be home again until September 23rd. Meanwhile, the University of Arkansas Fort Smith volleyball team will open the season Friday night at the University of Nebraska-Omaha Classic.
And still a bit more volleyball. The John Brown University team, 1-1 already on the season, plays in a tournament at the College of the Ozarks in Missouri this weekend. It is Wednesday, the final day of August 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We're inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. With us is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the features editor of What's Up, Our Town Life and Religion, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. That includes the Benton County Daily Record, the Northwest Arkansas Times, the Springdale Morning News.
And the Rogers Morning News.
Yes, Rogers Morning News.
I just thought I'd try to make
it. We're all exhausted now.
This try to make your title as long as possible.
This okay. Soon. Let's talk about banjos.
Let's.
Yes.
We were just talking about songs that, you know, you hit repeat and you hit repeat and you hit repeat. Mm-hmm. And the last song I fell in love with was a Trout Fishing in America song with Ezra Idlett playing the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
So if you love banjos, there's a banjo rally starting today in Eureka Springs.
I've been to the banjo rallies before, and one of my favorite things is when they have the banjo orchestra.
All banjos.
Dozens of banjos going together, and it is phenomenal.
What's a banjo rally? I'm sorry.
It's where they get together and they talk about banjos and they play banjos and they have this banjo orchestra where they're all on stage playing banjos.
Okay.
And seriously, the last time I went, you would walk up and down the street and there would be just people on benches or walking around playing the banjos. Banjo aficionados will have a great time.
Oh, yeah. Jam stations, picking events, playing every kind of music, jazz and bluegrass and ragtime, and vendors will sell stuff to go with banjos. It runs through September 3rd. It's $25 for the conference. To get into the whole thing at the end of the Ozarks in Eureka Springs. And you can find out more at banjorally.org.
Okay.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor of What's Up, Our Town, Life, and Religion for Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
150 years ago, Confederate General N. Bart Pierce watched as Union General Nathaniel Lyon's troops retreated from the bloody battlefield at Wilson's Creek, Missouri, writing that, "We were glad to see them go." The first major battle in the Trans-Mississippi, and the baptism by fire for Arkansas troops, was costly. The 5-hour fight at Wilson's Creek cost the Confederates 279 men killed and 951 wounded, while the Union lost 258 killed, 873 wounded, and 186 missing. A total of 414 Arkansas troops were among the casualties, with particularly high losses in the 1st Arkansas Mounted Rifles and 3rd Arkansas Infantry Regiment. They would be the first of thousands of Arkansas men to be killed and injured in battle over the next 4 years. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
Next spring, the 3rd edition of Artist Fair will take place around Northwest Arkansas. If the 2012 edition is like the 2 previous incarnations, there will be music, lectures, and more designed to connect the arts and nature. Such is the backdrop for sculptor Patrick Daugherty. He's been commissioned to create a work for Artisphere using his signature medium, sticks. His installations can be seen in the form of a geometrical shape, a huddle of benign stick giants, or otherworldly huts that tower over visitors. His creations have been applied to the side of the Savannah College of Art in Georgia, a side and atop the D. Cordova Museum in Lincoln, Massachusetts, and dozens of other locations from Hawaii to France. Last week, Patrick Daugherty was here to scout out possible material for the sculpture he'll make on the grounds of Walton Art Center. I asked him about the sticks he'll use for his work here next year.
Well, a stick is a sapling, really. We were talking this morning about sustainability, and sticks are ultimately sustainable because, you know, if you end up having to cut, say, if you in historic times, they might have raised sticks for various things, you know, parts of your house or making baskets. And so those sticks are gathered from stumps that they cut again and again and again. So each time you cut the stump, then up comes a bunch more sticks. So, you know, willow has been a traditionally gathered stick, but here we're going to try to use an ash tree. We found some big groups of ash that are growing in groves, and they're like half of an inch to 1.5 inches. So we'll cut those, and, you know, if there's enough sunlight, they'll come right back up from the stump and make a new forest.
When does the genesis of the idea, I'm thinking of cell division that you created on the side of the Savannah College of Art,
right,
which is gorgeous. When in the process do you get the idea that's what I'm going to try to do?
Well, in cell division, you know, it was on the county jail that had been given finally to the College of Art and Design. So I had thought, well, maybe escape hatches. And so one of the things that I like doing is hooking things passively, not having to tie or wire something on. They had all these large jail barred windows, and I thought, well, I could run my sticks in and amongst that, use as a matrix in which to hold these big pieces to the building. So just some of the practicalities of wanting to stick it on the building, wanting to make a kind of magic carpet or a series of escape hatches, you know, led me to think, well, I'll help these people get out of jail. I'll make this flying carpet. I'll make a kind of cell division.
Well, and the title works so beautifully because if you know it's a jail, then cell division, but it also looks like something biological on the side of the building as well.
Yeah, I like the look of natural phenomena, that it you know it's man-made, but for a minute you forgive that and think that somehow nature has reconscripted itself and has this kind of energy burst right in your midst.
They'll go away because they're organic.
Yeah.
And the elements will?
Yeah, the work that I make lasts about 2 years. You get one great year, one pretty good year, and you want to take it down while it still looks good. So that will be the course of this piece here at the Art Center.
That's okay?
Well, it is because, you know, sculptures have ideas embodied in them, and everyone starts accommodating themselves to the idea. It's a great thing about contemporary art is that, you know, it's experimentation. You try to do your best to make something that would excite people's imagination. And after a while, it loses its edge in that particular place. Everyone has seen it. They've accommodated themselves to the idea. They may feel a little nostalgic about it and love it. That's the time to take it down while it's still being loved.
Leave on a high note.
Leave on a high note. It's not redundant, you know.
Every place you go, and you go to many different places, you use volunteers from the area who may not, well, don't have as much experience working with sticks and putting them together as you do.
Well, we all know something about sticks because we played with them as children. So I capitalize on that kind of deeply embedded respect for sticks, interest in sticks, and memories of childhood and childhood play.
But I mean, when you have volunteers come together, there has to be stick construction 101 a little bit?
Well, I guess so. We're like, can you touch your toes? We're going to be working along the baseline today. No, everybody is pretty capable of working with sticks, and these constructions don't require very detailed work. It's more or less, can you pull the stick through the matrix and how you do it and what you're hoping to gain in terms of how the stick is supposed to offer a flourish on the outside or be tucked in such a way. So, you know, we have a kind of little working group get together, and we do a really good job and have a great time at doing it.
I've never seen any of your works in person, but I've seen many pictures, and I have to imagine that when people who turn a corner and are not expecting, have not read that this is going to be there, they have to ask themselves, what is that? Because at first it must look like it's sticks, and then they have to think, because they might be in the shape of people, might be in the shape of a geographic design, a geological design.
Yeah, that's right. You know, but that amazement or shock or something is a good leading edge for walking up to it and looking at it further. So, you know, we're trying to get people's attention when they're walking down the street or driving on the street or coming into a concert, and hopefully that they could loiter or another time come back and take a good look at it. But getting their attention first and foremost means that the sculpture is going to be examined further.
This year, you know your schedule, but I'm just going to remind you here, you have sculptures over the next course of months in Hawaii, Corvallis, St. Louis, Sausalito, France, Kentucky, here, Nashville.
Oh, that's right.
Wow. You're prolific.
I'm frightened now. Yeah, probably one of the best parts of me is that I can segment things and block out things that, you know, and only think of them as their time comes up.
I mean, so Hawaii is the next one, so you know, obviously know pretty much what that's going to be.
Well, I'm working on that today. We've been having emails back and forth with the organization that I'm working with there and trying to get the last details going.
What's the most exciting part for you? Getting the idea together or actually getting your hands together with it?
I think it is, in fact, building something that people respond to and feel, amazed by. But, you know, personally, I like the interaction I have with the community because it's so informative. You know, I think my work has grown and prospered partly because that I've found real starting points for new work from just conversations that I've had with the people that walk up during the installation process, and to have people inform you about their feelings. And so those are real places to start for building other work.
In the process, when you're building, what is it like? Is it like a work site? Do you not have time to – because you're going to get passersby who are curious and want to chat.
Well, we try to be courteous to the public, and, you know, there's no fence up, so they can walk up and see what we're doing. And there's a lot of conversation take place. If I can't answer directly, we'll have the volunteers that are helping can answer, or we'll have a greeter or some host if it gets to be too much. So that, you know, I think one way of taking the sting out of sculpture is actually talking to people about what you're trying to do, even though you may not know completely yourself or that, but just allay some of the uncertainties that, you know, sculptors are just normal people, and they're trying hard to make something within a vein that entertains and that tries to captivate, and that's their job. And so they're going about their job just like other people try to contribute through being a lawyer, a doctor, or any other thing.
If I had the means to give you an unlimited budget and you have access to any place on the planet, do you have a dream spot?
Oh, I'd be here. Well, I think that this is a town with a kind of elevated sensibility. You know, I've been very impressed, and I'm sorry that I haven't come to this place before.
Finally, with any piece of art, be it a portrait, a sonata, or a sculpture, almost everyone who walks by will take something different way, a different story or a different impression. Is that okay with you as an artist?
Well, I think that a good sculpture causes lots of personal associations, that there are starting points within the sculpture that everybody can identify with. They might change their mind. They may develop new ideas about it. But that they've seen a bird nest. They've seen a building from an indigenous tribe or a beaver dam or a conscription of limbs in the winter landscape or something that they're able to reminisce about and start into. A childhood play is often a strong starting point for looking at things built out of sticks.
Patrick Doherty creates sculpture out of sticks and saplings and will create a sculpture at Walton Art Center next spring as part of the third Artisphere Festival. He was in Northwest Arkansas last week to scout out native material for the work. He lives near Chapel here in North Carolina, and you can see many examples of his work from all over the world at his website, stickwork.net.
The Susan G. Komen Pink Ribbon Luncheon will be held on Thursday, September 29th from 11:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Springdale Convention Center. The themed fundraiser, Give Breast Cancer the Boot, will feature a fall boot preview, silent auction items, and music from recording artist Candy Coburn. Tickets and more information are available at komenozark.org or 750-PINK.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studios, Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell. She's the Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts.
Hey, good afternoon.
You have had young people coming through the halls.
Yes, this week we have actually gotten off to a good start for the fall semester, and we are really rolling. We feel like we're going to have a record number of enrollment this fall, and so many great programs because we're now reaching kids from preschool all the way through high school in music and theater and dance and art, and so we're just really excited. It's not too late to get enrolled. We're ready to go.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Even though things have started to roll.
Yes, we're barely getting going.
And there are some important dates coming up. You said you can still enroll,
yes.
But there are some markers here.
We have acting classes that are that began here early in September. Students can register for those just through the early part of September. We usually take students in the acting classes from first grade all the way through high school up until about the second week of the class. Now, we have a Extreme Teens Junior High School Theater Company. They're called the Extreme Teens. They meet on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings from 6 to 7:30 in the evening, and they are doing the musical production of Thoroughly Modern Millie. We will cast that on Thursday evening, September 1st. Students who are interested can enroll, and we take the first 30. We're nearly there, and you do not have to have any previous acting experience, but you need to be there Thursday evening, September 1st, in the Eccles Building on Waldron Road next to the Stubblefield Center there on the UA Fort Smith campus. 6 o'clock, Eccles will be casting that night.
So show up with enthusiasm. And
oh, yes, yes. And we'll give you some lines to read, maybe a little dance to learn with our choreographer, and maybe some music to sing, a phrase or two, and we'll cast the part.
That's the first, Thursday.
Thursday, right. September 1st.
And there are other September dates that are important for theater.
That's correct. Coming up, well, as far as theater goes, there is a high school audition prep class. If you are a serious acting student and you're thinking about going to college in theater, this audition prep class begins September 10th. We have some Saturday classes now, and it combines with what we call a musical theater workshop class. We meet every Saturday afternoon. The musical theater workshop class is open to students grades 8 through 12, and so we want to get students involved in that high school prep class and the musical theater workshop class. That begins on Saturday, September 10th, again in the Eccles Building. 2 o'clock is the audition class, audition prep class. 3 o'clock is the musical theater workshop. And, of course, they can just download registration forms for all these things at www.uafs.edu/academy. Get your registration form and get it in. And we take students, again, who have not had much experience, but they want that experience in high school or junior high. So that's one thing that's coming. Then when we turn to things like our instrumental ensembles, you know, we've talked so much about Youth Honors Orchestra. That is one of the neatest things that I'm just so excited that we have that program. It's a full-scale symphonic orchestra for strings, winds, brass, and percussion students who are, we say 6th grade through 12th grade, but you have to have at least 1 year of experience on your instrument. We are auditioning students through the first couple of weeks into September. We audition students on Saturday, September 10th, and then we will, unless it's full, we'll audition students one more weekend. Youth Honors Orchestra meets every Saturday from 10 until noon. If you are a wind, brass, percussion player, you can participate in the wind ensemble, which is also on Saturdays right after after Youth Honors Orchestra. And so all of those students, we're auditioning, even just today, we're auditioning students, but we will continue with auditions on Saturday, September 10th. And so I encourage students to come down again to the Eccles Building and get enrolled in that. Then in this choral area, you know, we keep expanding all these teen groups. Our children's programs are rolling. If you want in art or private music lessons or theater or choir, all of our children's programs are about to get started, and we encourage people, if you're preschool through elementary age, to jump in on any one of those activities. Children's choir starts on Monday, September 12th, and we're still enrolling students for that. But this high school, junior high and high school choir, we have developed an academy chorale for junior high kids and teenagers that want to sing some serious music. And that also, we are registering students to begin Monday, September 12th. We now have a teen vocal jazz, like a glee club, with a live band, 16 members. And we are auditioning students for that on Wednesday, September 7th at 5:30 in the evening. Then along with that junior high school vocal jazz, we've got a new SATB high school choir, and about a 10 to 15 member ensemble. And that will begin on Wednesday, September 7th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's hard to keep up with all these times and dates, yeah. But early September is, if you check the website or just give us a call at 479-788-7252, we can give you all the dates and times again. But we need to get students in, get them auditioned for these different activities.
So the bottom line here is there are a lot of dates in early September that you need to be aware of. If
yes.
you have any questions, go to the website.
That's correct. Or call us at 479-788-7252.
Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell is Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Time for a question now. We're going to give away some movie passes.
All right.
Well, here's a dilemma I have.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to give away some Northwest Arkansas Naturals tickets.
Yeah.
But the only way you're going to get them in time to use them is if you can come by the station. So here's the deal. We'll give away movie passes and Naturals tickets if you can come by.
Yeah.
But if you require mailing, because I don't want to put them in the mail, because the last regular season is tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there not one Friday night?
There's a game, but it's in Tulsa.
Oh, that's right, because Friday, Saturday, Sunday is in Tulsa. That's right.
Okay. Here's the question.
All right.
Today is the 108th anniversary, no, the 208th anniversary of the launch of the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Okay.
To explore, of course, the Louisiana Purchase.
Yes.
Which includes where we are sitting right now.
Mm-hmm.
From what city did that expedition originate?
Okay.
Was it Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? Was it Springfield, Illinois? Or St. Louis, Missouri?
If you know or have a guess, give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 31st of August, 2011. It's the anniversary of the death of the novelist and poet and automatic writer Elsa Barker in 1954, best known for her trilogy Letters from a Living Dead Man, a book of the occult which she said had been dictated to her by a man named X, whom she never saw and never met. It's the 64th birthday of manga artist Yumiko Oshima, born 1947 in the Tochigi Prefecture of Japan, a member of the Year 24 Flower Group, a group of women who have revolutionized shoujo manga, comic books for girls, bringing to these comic books issues of philosophy and sexuality and gender, the first major entry of women artists into comics in Japan. Her titles include Paula's Tears, To Joker, Strawberry Story, The Star of Cottonland, which has been collected in 7 volumes. It's the birthday of Eldridge Cleaver, born in Wabasica, Arkansas, in 1935. Family moved to California to the Watts section of Los Angeles. As a boy, he started getting into trouble with the law, petty theft, selling marijuana, sent to reform school once for stealing a bike, got out, was arrested for drug possession. He was sent off to Soledad Prison, where he discovered the works of Lenin, Karl Marx, Tom Paine. 1957, Eldridge Cleaver was arrested for rape, convicted of assault with intent to murder, ended up in San Quentin, then in Folsom Prison, began reading books by Malcolm X, started writing his own essays, which were collected in his famous book Soul on Ice, published in 1968. Got out of jail, helped to found the Black Panthers. He got in a shootout between the Panthers and the police, was charged with attempted murder, and he jumped bail, fled the U.S., lived as an exile in Algeria, Cuba, and France, came back to this country in 1975, renounced the Black Panthers, gave himself up to the authorities. The charges against him were dropped. He became a born-again Christian, ran for the Republican Senate seat in the state of California, wrote a second book, Soul on Fire. By the early 80s, he was disillusioned with evangelical Christianity and converted to Mormonism. He was baptized into the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 1983. By the mid-80s, he was addicted to crack cocaine, was arrested for burglary several times, possession of cocaine, got clean, went to work as a diversity counselor at the University of Laverne near Los Angeles, and gave a speech in 1998 saying he'd gone beyond civil rights and human rights to creation rights and the idea that God had made all of us first class and provided this earth as our home for all of us. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston entitled September. It rained in my sleep, and in the morning the fields were wet. I dreamed of artillery, of the thunder of horses. In the morning the fields were strewn with twigs and leaves, as if after a battle or a sudden journey. I went to sleep in summer. I dreamed of rain. In the morning the fields were wet, and it was autumn. September by Linda Paston from Carnival Evening, published by W.W. Norton & Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Priscilla Kinter. Be well. Do good work and keep in touch.
Time to answer the question. A couple of movie passes and possibly some Northwest Arkansas Natural baseball tickets. Question was, from which city did the Lewis and Clark expedition originate 208 years ago today? The choices were Pittsburgh, Springfield, Illinois, or Chicago.
And the answer is Pittsburgh.
Yes. Population 200 years ago?
In Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
1,600.
Wait, that's it?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why in the journal he kind of says we're leaving this village.
Oh.
Yeah. Pittsburgh, Kansas has many more people than that now.
I think so.
So we'll pick one correct name out of the ceramic cow and give you a call. And support for KUAF and Ozarks at Large is provided in part by the 9th Annual Savor the Flavor, a food and drink sampling fundraiser for Faith in Action. It takes place Tuesday, September 6th from 5 until 10 p.m. This self-guided walking restaurant tour allows attendees to sample food and beverages from more than 15 Dixon Street restaurants. 463-7860 or wregional.com for tickets or more information.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Strickler.
And Strickler is?
In Washington County. It's north of Floss and east of Skylight.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a great Wednesday.